Andrew, thank you for coming on the podcast. Damn. I appreciate you so much, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, so I think this is a great time in your life to record this podcast, as we were discussing on the walk over here, because you're leaving New York City, which is a place near and dear to your heart. So, like, what is your mindset like at this moment of your life?
I mean, it's definitely bittersweet. I've lived in New York for the last 4 years. It was something that I knew growing up. I always wanted to live in Manhattan. Like, growing up, I would visit with my family. My family's all from here. And it was just like, I didn't know ever where I wanted to go to college or anything, but I knew once I was done, like, I wanted to live in New York for a while. And so it's very strange. It's even like talking about it now, I like feel emotional. And it's like, because I was always, you know, knew that I wanted to be here. And now it's like sort of that chapter's closing. And it's not to say that it's fully closed. I'll definitely be back. But yeah, it's an interesting feeling. But at the same time, like, I've also known that I've always wanted to travel for an extended period of time. And so you can't have both. You can't live in Manhattan and travel like consistently for a while. So yeah, it's a time in my life. I think it's perfect for it. My lease ends literally today. I've been moving out all day, so taking a little moving day break. But yeah, it's bittersweet, but more so excited for the shift. And there's definitely going to be, I think, shifts in myself that I can't even predict at this time, with just moving locations and being in a completely new environment consistently for the next year or so.
Yeah. Well, you spent the last 4 years here. What are some of your favorite memories or favorite things that you've experienced from being here?
Oh, man. I was telling you about that video I'm thinking about making. It'll probably be out there by the time this I'll probably film it tomorrow or something. But yeah, I mean, some of my favorite spots is, a lot of it, it's just like places that I walk a lot. Like, that's literally my favorite thing to do in New York, is just walk around it, which is great. Like, my favorite thing to do almost in life is to walk around New York City. So being able to live here and do it as much as I did is really cool. But yeah, like, I mean, you know, West Side Highway is a consistent spot for me always. Central Park, walking down the mall, through Soho. Kind of like, yeah, anywhere around West Village, Soho area has kind of been my spot. That's where I've been for the last year. So yeah, those are like memories in terms of like physical locations. And then, yeah, I think a big part, obviously, in the last year since I moved here from, during COVID, I was away for a little bit. So it wasn't until after that, like in the past year, that I really started filming videos walking around New York. And it's been interesting how much that's sort of become a massive part of my content, is like, oh, you're the guy. Like, when people come up to me, they're like, oh, you're the guy who walks around New York City, like, with the microphone. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. So yeah, I think doing that is going to be something that I'll miss. I don't know if walking around, obviously, other cities will be cool too, but there's just something about Manhattan. So like, yeah, creating content around here is definitely going to be a massive memory and something that I'll miss.
Yeah. So it's crazy that you went from being scared to put your name on your content to being able to film in public. You got Randy Dufresne before you hit 10,000 followers as the way you put content out. What's the story behind Randy Dufresne? And how have you managed to gain confidence in yourself and your creations in what, just a year, 2 years? Like, nothing crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So Randy Dufresne, something that came about in college, and because everyone called me Andy throughout college, like all my college friends were like Andy. A lot of kids now call me Renane. Like, Andy's not as much of a thing, but yeah, it was freshman year. One of the seniors, name's Connor Cuff, just like started calling me Andy, and I was like, I'm not a huge fan of that name. And he's like, I don't care, you're Andy now. And so Randy comes from like a sort of alter ego. When I would get fucked up and go out and drink in college, it was like, oh, Randy, now it's Randy. And which is, I guess it makes sense, like even the word Randy is like, you know, I guess, I think it's like sexually rambunctious or something.
And is it?
I think something like that. Like, oh, they're getting Randy. It didn't specifically have to do with that, but it was definitely related. And then Dufresne is from, I'm blanking on the name of the movie right now, Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. So yeah, Dufresne is from that, like the main character's last name. And yeah, so it became like Andy Dufresne was kind of like Dufresne because of Murnane was like a nickname. Right. And yeah, and then it just like all of that sort of combined. And because when I started posting on TikTok, like I knew I wanted to, or even before I decided that I was consistently going to become like just like start posting content consistently, I made a TikTok back June 2020, just like a random French toast video, because all I could hear was Gary Vee being like, content, TikTok. And so I was like, all right, fuck, I have to just do something. So I made a little French toast recipe from this like anabolic French toast, like Greg Doucette. It's like high protein French toast with egg whites. Posted that, and I didn't want anyone knowing that I had a TikTok. Mm. Like I didn't want anyone finding out. So I was like, I don't even want to put my name on here.
Was your face on it?
Yes, it was like a funny picture of me with a mustache or something. But yeah, so it was Randy Dufresne for, yeah, the first, I don't know, couple months. And then even like when I started posting consistently, I still was like hesitant about that, even though I had decided I was going to post more consistently. And then as I got to like a few thousand followers on TikTok, I was like, all right, I should probably shift it to my real name and stop being so scared of anyone finding out about it. But yeah, the shift in perspective is kind of crazy even for me to think back. It seems like a different lifetime, you know, that mindset of being so afraid all the time. So, yeah.
How did that switch other than the few thousand followers you'd gain?
So creating content was something that I knew that I wanted to do for a while. Like I knew, you know, for whatever reason, I may have mentioned it in the last episode we were on, but yeah, I went through this exercise basically every morning where I imagined I was 100 years old and I was like, would sit with my eyes closed and really feel it. And then I would look back on my life and think, what do I regret about my life? What do I wish I had done differently? And every single day, every single fucking morning for a year and a half, it was, I didn't create content. I didn't
put 450 days in a row or exactly. Something crazy like that.
Nuts. Yeah. And I didn't because I was still afraid of what people would think. Literally all the things I talk about now were like, they come from experience. Like I know what it's like to be so afraid of what people think all the time and have it cripple you and stop you from doing the things that you want to do. And one of the first shifts I had was just recognizing that like people don't really care so much. Like they don't think about you very much. They're thinking about themselves. And so eventually I just got to a point, there was like a sort of perfect storm of things that happened. I had a lot of limiting beliefs about my ability to speak, articulate things, communicate. I didn't think I had very good confidence. I didn't like the way my voice sounded. And so this was like all within the week before I started creating content. It was after that year and a half of knowing that I wanted to. And then I had to, for work, we had to record a client call. And I listened to that back and I didn't think it went well at all. And I listened to it back and I was like, oh, that didn't go well. Like this time that I had to respond to a question, it took me like 5 seconds. I didn't articulate that thing well. And I listened to it back and none of those things were true. None of those things were true. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, holy fuck, these are like my truths. I know this about myself. And then it was like, none of them were actually true. Yeah. And that was like the shift I needed. It was like after that year and a half of knowing I wanted to create content, being afraid, having all these limited ideas. And then what I was telling you on our walk over here, it was like every time I used to post when I was younger, just like, you know, random Instagram posts, I would always have this little hesitation of like, oh, what's this person gonna think? Just like random kids from high school or whatever it was. And that just like turned off in my brain like that same week. And it was like all this perfect storm of things happening. Like my limiting beliefs went away. That thing, that hesitation went away. So it was almost like I was just like escaped prison and I was free. And that opened the doors to starting.
Whose voices were you scared to post for?
It was like just any random kids from like mostly high school. Sometimes it was like old friends, family members, just like random people I didn't even know. Just like that fear of being judged, of being looked at and looked down on, I guess. Or just like, yeah, I guess that just judgment. It was just so, yeah, crippling for me, but it was a bunch of random people basically.
So what happened for me was that I started meditating a lot, like 60 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. And what I realized by like the second week of doing that was that I was holding on to a scenario where a kid my senior year of high school pushed me into a locker and I felt so bad and I felt like so emasculated in so many ways. And I realized that so many of my actions in the future were just dealing with that situation and I was carrying on to that hatred for myself. Are there any scenarios like that in your own life where you could look back and be like, wow, I was really, my behavior was really catering to that scenario or that thing? Does anything come to mind for you?
Yes. Yeah. Something very specific, actually. I don't know if I've ever told this story outside of maybe my podcast. I mentioned it, but it was actually on a mushroom trip 2 months ago, maybe. So I could never remember seventh grade, like nothing about it ever. It was, and I never really thought anything of it. It was like, can remember sixth grade, remember eighth grade. And it was actually on a mushroom trip. It was like a heavy dose, like 3.5 grams or so, like full trip. I had my eyes closed. I was just lying in my bed, just kind of like, let's see what happens. Like I always do, basically, like no expectations or do my best not to have any. And all of a sudden there were these like fiery cartoon things, like that basically it looked like a cartoon scene from hell, sort of. And there were these like triangular things. They actually kind of look like the backdrop of this, but they had faces. And yeah, that's funny that I'm like telling this and like that's what they looked like, kind of with eyes.
Everything is supposed to be exactly as it is in this moment.
Exactly. And so for a lot of people, that would probably, they would think like, oh, I don't want to be feeling this. Like that's what leads to a bad trip, is like they see that and they're like, oh, this is scary. Like I don't want this. And that's, you know, that's what leads people to having a bad trip, which, you know, whether a bad trip is actually something that exists, I think is up for debate. But so when I see that, I'm like, I know that that's just an indication that like, oh, we're probably going somewhere kind of dark, like buckle up, let's see where this goes. And so we went back to seventh grade.
Wow.
To one of my classes. It was, I believe, my Latin class. I went to a Catholic middle school growing up. Yeah, like that's another lifetime too. But and so I had this teacher who was pretty small. He was like 5'2", like very small for a man. And he, so we went back to like the classroom, and there was a situation where he said my grade for a test out loud. I think I got like a C or a D or something, and he like kind of made fun of me for it in front of the whole class of like 20 kids. And so I saw that and I realized that that was like the root of my unworthiness. Wow. That carried into, you know, led to social anxiety, fear of what people thought of me, like all of that stuff. And I literally saw it like that was the root. And then all of these ribbons going throughout my life to like different situations I could remember as well. And like I could physically see it. They were like ribbons going to other sort of traumatic experiences. And that was like the root of it. And it gets crazier. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, holy shit, this is the root. And then it keeps going. And we go further back in time to this teacher's past growing up. Because as I mentioned, he's pretty small. And so I saw him when he was younger in middle school, high school, whenever it was, a younger version of this teacher. And there's a kid who bullied him who looked very similar to me.
Oh.
Yeah. And whether or not, you know, people could probably be like, oh, it's just your mind trying to make sense of everything. It's like, yeah, that's always going to be an argument, you know, but it was like this kid had very similar features to me. And so I saw where that, you know, making fun of me, putting me down came from, because I was 12 years old. Mm. Like what grown adult does that to a 12-year-old? And it's because, from my understanding, like just my being, like looking like the kid, whatever it was, like triggered him, and he saw that kid in me. And so it was, I saw that it was rooted in his own struggles. So I was able to see through all of that sort of situation that, oh, his making fun of me, judging me, putting me down had nothing to do with me whatsoever. It had everything to do with his experiences, his past, his shit that he's gone through. And so it was like a full release of all of that. And it was like all of the ribbons kind of like went, it was like everything went white and it was like blank slate. Like you're clear. Like there isn't this deep, deep, deep rooted insecurity of feeling unworthy that I didn't even know where it came from my entire life up until a couple months ago. And it was like a full release, blank slate, like done with that. We can move on now. You can see that it had nothing to do with you. It was just his own shit. And it was like one of the most powerful things. And to someone who doesn't understand mushrooms or like hasn't looked into them, they're probably like, that's insane. But like to someone who knows mushrooms, it's like, that's the type of shit that can happen. And it's like so healing.
What was the next week like for you?
Not too different. Like I was pretty close to that anyway. It was just like, there were still situations where I would get like, you know, super nervous or worried about something. And it's not to say that doesn't still happen. Like I still get worried about stuff, nervous about things. Like it's constantly coming up. It's just, I don't let it stop me from doing things anymore. But there was definitely like, there was an extra layer peeled back of like feeling free, feeling able to not shy away from like anything. And so, yeah, it was very freeing, I would say.
Did you know you had something like that deep in your past, in your soul? You had no idea.
I figured there was something, but I never knew what it was, like why I was so worried about all that stuff, like where it came from. Mm. And so I figured there was something, but you know, like I said before, like I literally never remember anything from seventh grade. And it was like, I think it was that thing that I just, you know, my subconscious packaged up and like put it in the storage room. And it was like, we're not going to even think about that. But all of the repercussions of that situation were still like, you know, fluttering through my life sort of, and still impacting me because I wasn't able to look at it. Yeah. So as much as it was, you know, tough to go back to a traumatic experience like that, and it's not, you know, the most traumatic thing ever, it wouldn't seem like that, but it's still like had a severe impact on me for pretty much the rest of my life. But at the same time, then looking back at something like that, knowing where it took me and the suffering that I went through, and then also knowing where I'm at now, like, you know, I would never be on this podcast if I hadn't gone through that in seventh grade, and then gone through all of those years of fear, worry, social anxiety, worried about what people thought of me all the time, and then learning how to deal with it, overcome it, and then starting to share it. So it's like, I'm very grateful that that happened, like so grateful. And it helps moving forward now for whatever situations come up. Like, I don't know where, you know, a difficult situation is gonna lead to. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna learn from it moving forward. And so it's so impactful and allows me to live my life without getting too hung up on the individual, like minuscule seeming things, or even like having rough weeks. Like I'm just like, what am I going to learn from this? I know there's something down the road, so I don't get so worked up anymore.
Yeah, that's the right perspective. Why do you think that awareness of something frees us from it in so many cases?
That is a good question. I think for a situation like that, it's like you have to be willing to look at it for what it is. And a lot of people try to avoid those types of things because it's like any sort of discomfort that we experience. Like people want to avoid the discomfort without understanding that discomfort and growth go hand in hand. Like their discomfort is entirely necessary to grow, but people are out there just like trying to avoid discomfort. It's like, yeah, you can avoid discomfort, but then there isn't that comfort. It's like the purposeful discomfort, you know, like working out, eating healthy, all of that stuff. Like I like to compare to like fitness nutrition because it's like universal, everyone can get on board with that. And in order to feel free and energetic, there's always gonna be some sort of trade-off. You can't have it all, like have your cake and eat it too type thing. So I think becoming aware of the situation itself and being able to look at it allows for that initial thing to understand like where it was coming from, and then growth is able to be had through it, but you have to go through that discomfort, and people want to avoid even knowing where it came from or looking back on it. But that's the thing that frees them because it'll allow them to let go of it.
Yeah, well, in my case, I didn't even, and it sounds like in your case as well, you didn't even know that you had that inside of you.
Exactly.
And so it's like, I don't know if I was avoiding the discomfort, or you were avoiding the discomfort on purpose. You just like didn't even remember it existed. I didn't remember. I didn't know that was still in my head. But once I saw it for what it was, I was like, oh, I send love to that person. I send love to myself for what I was in that moment. And so I guess my question to you then would be like, what do you suggest for somebody who might not know the things in their past that are holding them back? What should they do?
So my take on like going back into your past, I think it's beneficial for certain situations, but not necessary. I think if it arises, great. Like for that situation, I was still like doing all, it was only 2 months ago. Like that was after I was even on your podcast for the first time, you know? So I think it can be helpful in those types of situations, but at the same time, my sort of mentality with things is more so like recognizing that right now, there's nothing wrong with you. You're whole and complete right now. And you can't be more and you can't be less. Nothing can happen in the future that makes you less complete than you are right now. So it's almost like in the moment is where the change happens. Like it doesn't happen in the past, but there are benefits to being able to see something for what it is and see that, you know, that teacher specifically like had their own shit. So like I was able to feel empathy for them because they were just, you know, probably like the kid who bullied them got bullied. And it's like this long line, and we have to be willing to look at things in the moment for what they are. And people get hung up on this narrative that the past dictates the present, but it's actually the present that dictates the past because every single moment in the past was always the present. And so it's almost like comparing, like Alan Watts has used this analogy before, like a boat. And the path, like the present is a boat, you are a boat, and the past is its wake. It shows you where you've been, but it has no indication or telling of where you're gonna go next. Like the change happens here and now. So that is always gonna be the focus. And so it's just questioning what is holding you back from recognizing that you're whole and complete right now. So as, and there's probably hundreds of things for every single person that come up every day that they have these like limiting ideas in themselves. So it's just recognizing that your idea of yourself, the thoughts you have about yourself are never the truth of what you are. They're never going to be the truth of what you are. So as they come up, just question them in the moment. And it's not to say that it's going to change overnight necessarily, but over time, it definitely like can become more of a practice and a letting go. So I think going back to your question, there's definitely a benefit to being able to see something for what it is. But once you understand that like everyone's who's, you know, judging people and like just being a dick all over the place, like they had shit that they went through. Like it's their internal state of being that's causing them to act like that. It doesn't have to do with you. And I made a video once about how it's interesting when people, you know, when someone gives someone a compliment, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, that person, they're so nice. They're so happy. They're talking about them to their friends. Like that's such a great person. It's like, they don't see that like maybe it had to do with them. They don't compare it to like, how does it have to do with me? But then if someone puts them down, they don't go and be like, oh, that person's like, must be going through some stuff. It's like, oh, what's wrong with me? So like when someone puts you down, you look at yourself. But when someone builds you up, you're like, oh, that's such a great person. It's all on them. So it's recognizing that it's always on them. It's always their internal state that they're using you as a mirror to reflect that into reality. So it helps to keep that in mind. And then moving forward, you know, you don't necessarily have to look back on your past as much. You can just see in the moment like, oh, this person who treated me this way, like they were going through some stuff, or this person right now is treating me this way, like feel empathy for them because they're clearly going through some shit.
You mentioned the letting go of your past and that being such a critical idea for you. Take us through the moment you discovered that you should let go of the past and there was no past for you and the present moment was the only thing that you needed, and the six videos you recorded because you were so confident in the idea.
So that situation that you're talking about, that realization happened back, it was end of July, like I think it was July 24th, 2021. And so it was well into my content creating career, talking about the ideas that like the present moment is all there is, and you know, the past doesn't exist, future doesn't exist. But it was always up until that point more conceptual. And I was talking about things that I, you know, had read about, learned about, like whatever. And so I was walking around New York and I was listening to one of Eckhart Tolle's audiobooks. It's called Stillness Speaks, one of his smaller ones. And there's a part that I've heard, you know, thousands of times in my life. I've made videos about it, talking about how the past isn't real, like present moment's all there is. But I was able to look at it in a little bit of a different light in this situation. And I was able to imagine for a second that, like, I literally didn't have a past. Like, I didn't have a past whatsoever. And I was almost just, like, born into this moment right now that I was experiencing. And it was after a week. So, like, the reason I was, you know, listening back to the book and, like, trying to do all these different things was because I had a week leading up to it that was just, like, I was going through some personal stuff, like dealing with some shit, having a lot of intrusive thoughts, like having a really difficult week. And it lasted like a full week. And it was by far the longest I had gone without being able to, like, get myself out of it. You know, I was going back to all of the, I call them now, like, identity-based practices of, you know, thinking about gratitude, like doing positivity affirmations, meditating, like, I'm not my thoughts, like reminding myself of that. And, like, nothing was working. Like, all my toolbox was empty. I'd used everything in there. And I think it was very powerful that I tried to use all of those things and then none of them worked that week. And then it just hit me in that moment, like, what if I didn't have a past? And it was because all of that stuff I was, like, worrying about, dealing with in my life was all things that had happened in the past that I was afraid of happening again in the future. And that's oftentimes where our anxiety arises from, is looking back at a past situation, afraid that it's going to happen again. Not necessarily always a specific situation, but, like, the feelings that we had, we're afraid of having them again. And so when I was able to imagine that I didn't have a past at all, it was like that whole weight was lifted. And I was able to go a step further and recognize that, okay, so if I'm just the awareness of this moment right now, some semblance of awareness of my environment and myself, like, I'm able to recognize the thoughts going on inside of my mind, but because I no longer have a past, they're no longer personal. And through that, I was able to recognize that the entire idea of Andrew was the past. It was all past. It was everything leading up to right now. But if I'm just right now, then maybe I'm not this idea of Andrew. Because the idea of Andrew or of Danny is everything that we've ever done, you know, all of our accomplishments, trauma, experiences, all of those things. And so when you're able to let go of that, you see that, like, oh, I'm just the awareness of this moment mm-hmm. right now. Some semblance of awareness. I don't exactly know what, but I kind of settled on the awareness of Andrew as opposed to being Andrew. And it was like being able to take a step back. And since then, I've let go even of that, of the idea of it being confined to Andrew, because if Andrew doesn't actually exist, Andrew's just an idea, a concept that exists differently inside of everyone's mind, then maybe I'm just the awareness of reality. Maybe I'm just reality experiencing itself. And so, yeah, that was obviously very powerful. It was like the shittiest week I had had in years to the most euphoric feeling I had. I felt like I was high. I'd never done any psychedelics, but I felt like I was, you know, tripping. Now, looking back, knowing what it feels like, I felt like I was tripping for like 3 weeks straight. It was like that whole weight of identity was lifted. I felt like I was walking 6 inches off the ground. Like, it was powerful. And so down the road, I started making videos about, like, that whole week I was talking about, like, you're not what you think you are. You're not what you think you are. You're not what you think you are. And that eventually led to my podcast co-host, like, finding me and us connecting and, like, all that stuff. But down the road, you mentioned the video I made. So I made videos talking about that. And specifically, like, imagine if you had no past, like, and the freedom that may come with that for people. And it's funny because talking about, like, being consistent and having something that you know could be powerful. So I made, I think it ended up being like 5 or 6 videos having to do with that. And the first 5, like, didn't do that great. And I don't mean they didn't do great at all. Like, they got probably like 30, 40,000 views on TikTok. And for me, that's like pretty good, but not, it's not viral, mm-hmm. you know? And I just knew, it wasn't that I wanted it to go viral, but I knew how powerful it was because it literally changed my life. So I was like, and that's always been my perspective on things. Like, oh, this thing helped me. I'm going to share it. We're not so different as humans. It'll probably help someone else. So I just kept posting like different versions of it. And it was kind of like a game for me, like, what's going to hit. And then one day I posted one that hit, and it ended up getting like 6 million views on TikTok. I think it ended up doing like 2 million on Reels. Like, the second time I like reposted it once, and it did way better for some reason. It got like 2 million on Reels. And yeah, so it was interesting to see that sort of like meta thing happened with content too, that like I kept going with it. And that's just like sort of another topic having to do with it. But yeah.
What do you think is going on there with posting the same type of idea six times and then the sixth time it really connecting with people? What makes specific content really connect with people?
I think it's like a definitely a combination of a number of things. It's almost hard to say, but it's I think a big part is being able to resonate with people like on a more specific level. It's not just like, oh, like if you're worried about something, like recognize this or blah, blah, blah. It's like it has to be a little bit more specific, I think. And so that is not something that people talk. I've never come across a video where someone's like, imagine you had no past. Like mm-hmm. you literally had no past. You're just the awareness of this moment right now. Like how freeing is that? And that was more or less, or I started it with, there's absolutely no reason you need to keep identifying with the past. And then it was like, and if you disagree, give this exercise a shot. Cause it's one of the most freeing things I've ever experienced. So it was definitely like a solid hook for sure. And I've gotten better over time at like trying to use better hooks that aren't like too cheesy. Like sometimes they're pretty cheesy, like this one recognition changed my life or whatever it is. But yeah, I think for people, they have to be able to see themselves in the situation. And so that's oftentimes the videos that do very well is where people can see themselves in what I'm talking about, or they've experienced something super similar, is when I see videos do pretty well. But yeah, it's a number of things. You never fully understand what the algorithm's saying, but yeah.
How have you personally changed as a creator over the last year, specifically since that realization? Mm-hmm. And since those videos you put out in July of 2021?
Yeah. I don't really consume that much in the self-help realm anymore. Like, I really don't read that many books. I do here and there. But, like, back before that, I was very much, like, you know, understandings from books I'd read and sharing things. And it was all, like, kind of conceptual. But I think that shift made everything less conceptual and more like, oh, I see this for like what it is, as opposed to I understand what someone else has said about it. It was more so like these are coming from within me somewhere. I can't always say where necessarily, but there's been more fluidity, I think, a little bit more freedom with the videos, like, and just over time in general with my content. Like looking back at old videos is kind of funny. I actually sent a friend who she's been like thinking about posting more talking videos. She does just a bunch of different stuff, but not always like talking. And I've been talking to her about how like, oh, it's just, you gotta start, you gotta keep doing it. Like, and she's like, oh, you're so articulate with it. Like, and I was like, I've not always been that way. And so I went back to my old TikToks and I found a couple where it's like, it's so rigid and like super structured. And I'm like, so serious. There's no like looseness or it's just a very different energy basically. So I sent her that. I've actually thought about reposting some of those with me like stitching them or something, talking about that, because people see, you know, someone, I've been doing it for 2 years. I've probably made, I don't know, 1,000 videos, probably more total pieces of content. So it's like, there's been a lot of work and effort that it's gotten me to this point. Like it was a lot different back when I started, and to someone who's just starting, you know, they can't compare, you know, it's the cliche, whatever, like you can't compare someone else's chapter 20 to your chapter one type thing. So I don't remember what the question was, but yeah.
How have you changed as a creator? You answered it in the past year. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking here on the way about just like you've improved, but you haven't set out to improve. You didn't say to yourself, I'm going to be better and I'm going to analyze my videos. You just continued doing the action. And as a result, you naturally just got better. What does that mean to you? And how do you apply that lesson to the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. Because, yeah, that's a place I kind of differ with a lot of people, I think. A lot of people are super analytical. And as a person, I'm fairly analytical. Like, I was always better at, like, the math stuff in school. But with content, I've literally never, like, looked back at videos and looked at, like, how this performed versus this, like, this structure of video versus this. Like, I have a general idea based on, like, how things perform and I can see. But at the same time, like, with improving on something, like, action is significantly more impactful than anything else you could ever do. So just like, even if you're not ready, just like doing it and doing it poorly for a while and just like continuing to do it, obviously doing your best at it, not like purposely doing a super shitty job and like putting no effort into it whatsoever, but like consistently putting yourself out there and sharing things, like you're inevitably going to get way better just from doing it, not going back and analyzing and thinking about like, what can I do? And so you don't necessarily have to judge your progress along the way. Like you're always making progress just from doing the action, just from taking it. And so that is sort of freeing for people, I think. But at the same time, like one of the core things you have to let go of is what your fear of what people will think of you. Because if you're new to something, you're not going to be very good at it. You're probably going to be pretty awful at it when you start, but you can't become better without starting. Like you have to start, and inevitably, you know, like for podcast episodes, like we both have podcasts, obviously you have a podcast, but like your 100th episode is going to be significantly better than your 10th. 10th is going to be significantly better than your first, but you can't post the 10th before you post the first. You can't post the 100th before you post the 10th. You have to do that in order to do so. So letting go of your fear of judgment of what other people think, being able to recognize that they're just projecting their own insecurities. Most of the time when people say, I have a take that like when people cringe, it's just because they are trying to, or what is it? Yeah, cringing is a coping mechanism used by insecure people who don't have the balls to do what you're doing. So in order to allow themselves to feel better for not putting themselves out there, they cringe. It's a coping mechanism for them, because that allows them to be like, oh, this person's like such a loser or whatever, as opposed to looking within themselves and wondering like, why can't I do that? And it's most of the time because they're afraid, because they're insecure about putting themselves out there. So being able to understand those things fundamentally helps a lot and allows you, you know, the freedom to go out there and put yourself out there and recognize that, you know, their judgments don't have to do with you. It's their own shit. So when people judge me now, I kind of laugh and I'm like, you really think I care what you think? Like, that's pretty funny to me. Like, that you think you have that much power over me to think that I actually care what your opinion is as someone who doesn't even put themselves out there. So it helps to understand those things, to have the freedom to then go do it. Because I think anyone could be a content creator. Like, everyone has something about them that makes them unique, something they're passionate about. And the reason that so many people aren't, I think, is a lot of it that fear of judgment of other people's opinions.
One thing I was talking to Doma Altan about in the last episode was how as you gain an audience or as you gain people who know you, the pressure actually rises in your own head about what the other people expect. She talked about her podcast, how she's doing it, but now she's scared of making it the best possible podcast episode because she knows people are really expecting great work from her. And she said it would almost be easier if she had no audience to create and do 100 shitty episodes. So from your perspective, how have you dealt with this? And now a million people know who you are. How has that changed the expectations of what you put out, and how have you overcome that?
Yeah, I resonate with that a ton, because even a couple weeks ago, I was starting to feel like I had a pretty structured like blueprint to, I knew how to make a video do well. I actually took this social media course or got it. My buddy, Sean Casey, is a fitness TikToker, influencer guy, great dude. And he put out a course called The Social Circle. Definitely recommend people getting it. It definitely helps. It's got some awesome information in there. And it gives you sort of like a blueprint for how to, you know, go viral, how to build a community. It's super helpful. But at the same time, I got a little bit too caught up, I think, in that structure. And I started to feel, and it's not to say it was like, the course says anything about like you have to do this. It's like gives you tools, but like tools can be misused. And it started to weigh on me that type of structure that I knew could do pretty well. But at the same time, like there was a part of me that wanted to do different stuff. But at the same time, then I was afraid of putting stuff out there that I put more effort into, but maybe it doesn't do as well because it's not what people are used to. And so I had all of these expectations of myself in my head that I thought were like, oh, all these people are expecting all of these things from me. But realistically, like all of the expectations that you think others have of you, or just your own expectations of yourself, that you're, you know, using them as a prop to like think that it's on you. But it, even if someone else does have an expectation of you, it's still you're internalizing that. And then you create that as an expectation of yourself. It's always from within. And so, yeah, a couple weeks ago, I was feeling this way and I was like, fuck, I'm feeling kind of trapped by my own content. And so I made a video. It was just like very off the cuff. I was in my apartment and I was like, something about like, do you ever feel trapped by something? Like you get good at something, you feel trapped, and then you think all these people have expectations, but they're really only expectations you have of yourself. And so I was thinking about like wanting to do different types of videos and sort of making a shift into just any different types of videos, like not just like the walking around New York with the microphone, but like more vlogs, more like voiceovers on like cooler other videos that I would have to spend more time editing. And so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about like what type of video should I post. And I was like, fuck, I'm thinking about this right now, especially as a content creator. I'm sure a lot of people probably feel this way. I didn't expect people necessarily to resonate with it, but I was like, fuck it, I gotta just like put something out there that's very raw and different. And so I did, and a lot of people resonated with it, especially content creators who I'm like mutuals with. There was a lot of comments from people like that, and it like it was the exact shift that I needed. And that was maybe 3 weeks ago. And since then, I've been posting like much different types of videos and filming videos that I wouldn't have even thought of filming before I had just like put that thing out there. It's so funny how recent this is. And it was like a massive shift. And I'm only really realizing it like right now, how much of a shift. Cause like now I've been doing some more vlogs, more voiceovers, just like more interesting and open videos, sharing more of myself as opposed to just being like a guy who walks around giving advice. And a lot of people have really enjoyed them. They don't necessarily go viral, but it's building a deeper connection with people, I think. And so it's been really cool. And even like right now, I just posted a video yesterday that I had like clips from like 2 months ago, talking about my family and my relationship with them and how it's been impacted, and just like talking about stuff like that that people resonate with. But it's not a direct like, if you're worrying, like blah, 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 you know, that type of shit. So it's been cool. And yeah, but those expectations of yourself, like being able to let go of those and have that mentality of that freedom, because like in every moment, it's always people resonate with the mentality. Mm. It's not necessarily the action. And people can feel, because, you know, we can go into the depths of how we're not disconnected at all inherently. Like there isn't actually division in reality, and we're all just reality wandering around perceiving division. But so through that, you can recognize that like no one actually is thinking about those things. Oh, fuck, I lost my train of thought.
It's all good.
I was going too far with it. but
it made me think about how the best moments of life are when we're connected. It's like when we're sharing a laugh with someone, when we're sharing a great conversation, sex. It's like when we're, it's those moments where we're literally connected are the moments where we feel the best. Why is that the case?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways I can go with this, I feel like. But I think the recognition of seeing yourself in other people. Mm. And that really is, I feel like, what we're longing for at the end of the day is like that connection. And I think there's some, you know, you can go back to like caveman days, ancestral days, when, you know, if people didn't like you, you got ousted, you got ostracized, you're gonna die. So there's like an aspect of our evolution that causes us to care a lot about what people think when it's not really, doesn't really matter anymore, because it's part of, you know, our DNA at this point, that like we gotta be liked or else we'll die.
And we're out of the tribe.
Exactly. And so I think that connection is inherent to us because there isn't actually division between us. You know, we perceive division, but it's only perception. It's only conceptual division. And it's exacerbated by, you know, the identities we hold on to, the labels that we use in society. Like right now, everything in this room just is. But, you know, we call this isness a microphone, we call this a sweatshirt. But it's not actually a sweatshirt. That's just a word that we use to label this as something different than something else. But just because it's different doesn't mean it's divided. And as you're able to see more clearly that there isn't division in anything, and see that your idea of yourself is only an idea, is only a concept. Your idea of yourself is something separate from reality, doesn't actually exist in reality. It's just a concept. And as you let go of that and you just become sort of one with the environment that you're in, one with the action that you're taking, you become the action that you're taking. And that's essentially flow state. So I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent with this from the initial question, but yeah, flow state, I think, is just taking action without so much idea of yourself. You're one with the situation. And that's why people, when they talk about like people who are in deep flow state, they don't, you know, they forget to go to the bathroom, forget to eat, they don't sleep for days because they're not thinking about themselves. And there's obviously like functional things that you should probably get some sleep at some point, but because they're just so enthralled in the actions that are being taken, they don't think about themselves so much. So everyone talks about flow state a lot, and I don't hear necessarily that often it being talked in the realm of identity and how it's a state in which you just have less idea of yourself. But people talk about how it's like peak human experience is being in flow state. So as you let go more and more of that idea of yourself, you just exist in flow state all the time. But people are trying to hold on to that idea of themselves and know themselves. And I would argue that you can't know yourself. You are yourself. How could the knower be that which is known as well? That implies two entities. And that's the fundamental confusion, that mass state of psychosis then that our society is experiencing, is thinking that they're two, thinking that idea of themselves is the truth of what they are, but they're just what is. They're just that observer of reality, but they're also the observed, and that's the unity that they can recognize. But yeah, you know, your idea of yourself is never going to be the truth of what you are. It's only a concept. But as we hold on to it, we feel more divided, and as we let go of it, we experience more unity and less fear and less worry and less suffering.
Yeah, it reminds me of what Ram Dass said when Mike Posner went to him and asked him for advice. He basically said, the only thing you need to do is love. And it was the simplest thing, but the idea and that statement has stuck with me, because if the only thing we need to do is love, it's just connect with another person, connect with that moment. And I just thought it was an interesting way to frame it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I hesitate with the word love, because I think it can differ for a lot of people. A lot of people have a concept of love similar to, you know, the concept of God.
Right.
Like everyone immediately has an idea of that. But I think love is more or less what's left when you let go of all of the ideas that you have, all of the perceptions you have of reality. You see that, and all the judgments that you have of other people, of yourself, of the way things are, you see that everything's happening perfectly all the time. And that recognition is love, but it's like, it's almost like what's left when you let go of everything that you think is based on your individual perception and experiences.
So if love's not the right word, or there could be a better word than love, what is the right framing from your perspective?
Yeah, I think it's tough to even like come up with a word. Like everything just is, I think, and there's a neutrality in that, because I think when people use, you know, the positive phrases, a lot of times that can cause someone to act in a certain way that may not actually be the most beneficial for people. And something like, you know, tough love, I guess, is like a branch of love, but most people wouldn't think of tough love and love as being the same thing. And sometimes having that tough love and doing what is actually best for them has more of an impact, but it's not that, like, you know, love and light positivity sort of mindset, because a lot of times if you're caught up in that mindset and think you have to always be that way, you'll allow someone to continue down a path that may be incredibly detrimental to them. And sometimes there's more impact in telling someone the way it is, as opposed to just like allowing them to continue on this path that they're on into, you know, self-destruction.
When you were talking about the flow state before, my friend Ben Wilson has this great podcast called How to Take Over the World. And he basically studies different people like Alexander the Great, Napoleon, Steve Jobs, Walt Disney, people who have achieved tremendous things on this floating rock in space. And one common theme that he noticed is that the people he studies don't eat at a surprisingly high rate. And where I'm going with this is that it's interesting because maybe those people are so enthralled with what they're doing in the moment, they're so attached to that moment that they forget to eat, and they're consistently in the flow state and consistently in a state of, wow, this is amazing, or wow, I'm so attached to what I'm doing in this moment, I'm becoming one with it. Yeah. What does that resonate for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So when he says they don't eat, is it like they don't eat often or like,
yeah, not that they consume zero calories, they very infrequently ingest calories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe like once a day, or they have one meal for dinner, but not necessarily for breakfast. Is kind of a theme that he's noticed over and over again.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it makes sense. It's kind of, you know, with that idea of flow state that I was talking about, that there isn't so much idea of yourself that's coming into every single situation. And so there's not, it's like when it arises, when you feel it, it's there, like the hunger pangs, the, you know, ghrelin hormone spiking. But yeah, it's not this, because also they're so enthralled in the thing that they forget. And I think even with food, there's like a digestive process and there's like energy that it takes to do that. So it's like they don't want to trade that, they want to utilize that energy to the maximum capacity that they can do something. And so, yeah, I think extended periods without eating, like I used to be really into intermittent fasting.
You did a presentation.
I did.
For your coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back maybe like 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. On intermittent fasting. Yeah. And now your views on intermittent fasting have changed and you've updated your mental models for what you think. But why was that such a big thing for you at that time, 4 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it was something. How did I get into that? I think Greg O'Gallagher, Kinobody. Yeah, he was talking about it a lot. That's like one of his big things. And so I started getting into that. And it wasn't even necessarily to gain or lose weight, but it was just something that I realized. It was more so, I think, the mental side of it. And I'm not like going to say it changes your life necessarily, but there is an aspect of digesting food that takes energy. Like it takes energy to digest food. And that's why people go into like, you know, food comas, is like all of their energy, all of the blood is going to their stomach to be able to digest that food. And so my process with that was actually in college, senior year, I started to get into it. I played baseball and that spring year, Mondays were always our off days. And so on Mondays I would like practice intermittent fasting, and I would like kept pushing it further. And because I'm kind of like a person of extremes, I got to a point where it's just like, I was just eating once a day. And because the main reason, it had nothing to do with weight loss or weight gain or anything. It was even tough to get, I wasn't focused on protein back then, but now it's like, it's tough to get enough protein and for if you're trying to get a lot of protein in the one meal mm-hmm. a day. But the main benefit I saw was that I just had so much energy throughout the day. And it's interesting because people talk about how and long term, obviously you need food, nutrients, sustenance for energy, but short term it can take some away. So those Mondays I would just like kept pushing it further and further. And then I was afraid to do it on days where I had practice or games because I just wasn't familiar enough with it. I didn't know how it was going to impact my performance and stuff. So I'd just do it on those Mondays. And then after my baseball season ended, I started doing it more consistently. And I really did find that my energy was like a lot higher throughout the day. And people argue one way or another. And I'm not so much on the train of like the extreme train as I was anymore, but I think there is still an aspect of that. And so I'll still utilize that now where I'm not eating once a day anymore. I did that actually for a while when I was my first year and a half of work. I wouldn't eat till after I was done with work at like 6 p.m. I would get home and then I would just like eat a massive meal. And there were definitely aspects of that that weren't very healthy also. Like I'm not going to say eating disorder, but it was like getting like within that realm a tiny bit, but yeah, definitely not. But yeah, and then so now I kind of utilize it, and I understand that like when I eat breakfast, especially early, it's like, it's not to say that it takes a lot of energy away, but I definitely keep meals smaller earlier in the day because I know that like it's going to make me more tired. I'm not going to be able to be as focused on things, and so. Yeah, I still utilize that to some degree and have definitely found benefits.
It's funny because when you did the presentation on intermittent fasting, the people in your company said, why don't you create content on this? And it's almost like foreshadowing for what you would eventually become and where you would eventually go. And it's really cool to think about some of the dots looking backwards. Are there any other dots you could point to that say like, wow, I really was supposed to create content. I really was supposed to use the information that I gained to help other people mm-hmm. in your past, other than that video, that presentation you did.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I was just thinking about, I think I might've mentioned that in the podcast I was on yesterday, but yeah, it's funny like looking back on my life, because when I was younger, I was very energetic, played a lot of sports, and I was always like kind of putting myself out there. Like we were looking at home videos, my family last Christmas. And I was like a pretty wild kid. Like I was, and liked attention a lot, which has not been a big part of my life until like now with content. It's not like I crave it, but like, I'm all right with people like, you know, coming up to me, talking to me, like putting myself out there, obviously. But for so long, there wasn't that. There was that fear of that. And I think that was rooted in what I talked about earlier in seventh grade. But looking back at those home videos, I was like, you know, playing the piano. And
what age is that?
That was probably like 10, I think. So that was still pre 12-year-old like shift. And or maybe like, 8, 9, 10. And I was playing piano and my mom was filming. And I was like all about it, like getting filmed. And then she was like, Andrew, almost done. We got to wrap it up. And I was like, no. Two more minutes. And then I get like more into it. And it's funny looking back at those, how I was more like myself and more free with things. And then for such a long period of my life, probably from like, you know, I if it started at the age of 12 through, you know, 18, it started to improve a little bit, but then it really wasn't until like, you know, 22, 23. So it's like, that's a good 10-year period. And now it's like, I'm out the other side. And then, so some other things, you mentioned the presentation. So that was something. And I've always been passionate about a bunch of different things. You know, like the intermittent fasting was like a big part of life. Now it's like obviously content and talking about everything I talk about, you know, whether it's mushrooms, like when I get into something, I get into it and like really get excited about it. And so when I still used to do that back, you know, that was what, four years ago, I think. And so some of my friends, Haley and Amita at work, they were like, after that presentation, they were like, Andrew, when are you going to become an influencer? And I just laughed it off. And I think I had already been doing that 100-year-old scenario where I knew I sort of like wanted to be a content creator, but I always push it off and be like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I can't put myself out there like that. And yeah, and then it was that work client call I recorded. That was a big impactful thing that happened. And then with starting on TikTok, when I decided I was going to start creating content more, it was a lot of like just on my Instagram story, I was doing like cooking videos. And then I made a vlog on YouTube. That was like my first like bigger piece of content I put out. And I was talking to two of my buddies, Jake and Daniel, about it. And they were like, do you have any weird, funny shit in there? Like, we know you can be like a weird fucker sometimes. And I was like, damn, no, I don't. It's actually pretty boring. It's like a morning routine. And I'm like monotone talking, walking around my apartment, like giving an apartment tour and stuff. So that little inkling, I was like, all right, what can I put in here? And so I thought of the clip from Dodgeball when Mike Goodman's sitting at his desk and he has, I think it's maybe a pizza or a donut in front of him. I used a donut for this prop, and he has like his nipples clamped and he's like shocking himself doing, it's like self-aversion therapy, he called it. So he would like want to get it and then shock himself to train himself that like that's bad or something. And then so I, for whatever reason, that came to mind, and I thought of that. And so I can still picture going to Home Depot to like pick up the supplies and like walking down 23rd Street to the 23rd and 6th Ave Home Depot in Chelsea and pick up the stuff. Little did I know like how much of an impact like buying those props would have on the rest of my life to a degree. Wow. Because I made that video and then I had it, I posted my vlog, and it was like, you know, 20-second intro of me like doing the White Goodman thing. And so I had that, it was like 20 seconds, and I had already created that Randy Dufresne TikTok account. I made the French toast video. This was now end of July of 2020. And I had the video that I made in June. And so I was like, oh, I have a TikTok account. I have this clip. I don't know. Maybe that looks like something that would be on TikTok. Like, I had no idea anything about TikTok. And so I posted it, and it basically went viral. And it was like, I got a few thousand followers from that. And because I had already decided I was going to start creating content after that, I had like 3,000 followers maybe. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll start posting on TikTok too. And then started making videos on there too.
Go figure.
Yeah, there's a number of things. But yeah, that's a few specific memories that I have.
What stands out to me about that is you sending it to your friends, that initial video, and them knowing you well enough and you trusting them to be like, this is who I am and this is who I'm trying to be. And it doesn't seem like you didn't fear their judgment. You were like, this is who I am and appreciative of that. And so I guess what I'm curious about is like, if you weren't scared of their judgment, whose judgment were you worried about?
So I think at that point, that was like post fearing judgment. I think it was just like, a lot of times it wasn't anything specific. I think it was just like the concept of others, like being able to impact my worthiness essentially based on their judgments. Like I was putting so much weight on other people's judgments. Like that was the truth. That was where it was coming from. So it wasn't even necessarily anyone specific. It was just like this concept of like others having the ability to impact my worth, my sense of value, which now I know obviously can't happen. It isn't true, but when you're caught up in that, you're fearing any potential situation.
And what about your friends in general? Like what do those two friends talk to you about now when they saw literally the first creation of what it would become?
Yeah, no, they're super supportive. I talk to them a good amount. They really appreciate, you know, all the content stuff. So it's fun being able to, and more, like it was interesting when I first started creating content, like even some of my closer friends would be like, Andrew, like what's going on here? Like, what are you doing? Cause it was a lot of Instagram story stuff and like cooking videos and just like turning the camera around basically and talking to it. And early on I was getting a lot of like, what's going on here? What are you doing? Like,
are you losing your mind?
Exactly.
Type thing.
Exactly.
Type comments.
Yeah. And luckily that little switch that I always had, that fear, like went away at that point. So like it didn't bother me as much, but if I had some of that still, like that may have derailed everything. But so I think it's important to keep in mind that early on when you're starting out with something, that people are going to have opinions about it. They're going to ask questions. And I actually think I know why that is. And people desire certainty or try and have certainty and fear uncertainty at all costs. And so you are something in their environment and they want their environment to be certain and they desire that quite a bit. And so when you start to change, when you become something else, when you start doing things differently, like outside the norm of their idea of you, all of a sudden their entire reality is uncertain because you are changing. And so they're like, I want certainty. Like this idea of you that I have, I can't package you up anymore because you're changing. And so there's always going to be pushback in those situations. And that goes for, I can talk forever about, you know, fear of uncertainty in our society. But yeah, that desire, that craving for that sense of certainty in their environment causes them to react like that. And so it's like interesting to understand that, but then now moving on as things like shift and my accounts grow, it's like all of a sudden, you know, those same people, they're still my good friends. And it's like, now they think it's cool. And like, even last night I was with a bunch of my friends, out at some bars, and like someone came up to me and recognized me and they all like hype it up. And it's funny, doing that now. And like everyone's on board now. But yeah, early on, it's like that massive shift in things causes people to respond in very specific ways because you're making their environment uncertain.
I think that's a really great way of framing it. You mentioned about going out to a bar, and we went out to a bar as well. And I think it's a really important thing you've done in that you've started to talk more freely about the things you do that people's perception of you might not line up with. And it's also apropos for us to talk about this right after, because you are a normal kid. And you present yourself and someone could assume you're just this monk sitting on the steps. But Talk about the journey you've gone to being more yourself online.
Yeah. So I think even, and it all comes back to your own idea of yourself, really. And even like last summer, I had this sort of idea of myself where I thought that other people were thinking of me a certain way. And so I was thinking of myself in a certain way. And I was like, oh, should I, now that I talk about this stuff and like I'm more spiritual, like, should I not be going out, like not doing some of these things that I enjoy doing because like that's like against the rules of spiritual person. And and so there's been luckily a releasing of that. There's a funny situation. I think it was when was that? It was last year at some point. It was like around the winter time, like SantaCon actually. I was at a SantaCon party in New York, and a kid who had followed me on content like came up to me, and I'd been there for couple hours like playing beer pong and stuff, so I was pretty drunk with, and so he came up to me and I was like, dude, I love your content, like holy shit. And I was like, oh, what's up, man, like put my arm around him. And he's like, honestly, I'm kind of surprised that to see you here. And I, and in that moment I was like, what, really? And he's like, yeah, I don't know, just like the stuff you talk about, I wouldn't expect you to like be a partier and stuff. And I was like, I mean, yeah, I like doing it. And in that moment I recognized like, oh shit, I gotta start sharing some more stuff, because I don't want people having this idea of me. And it's been very interesting. And actually my podcast co-host Ray has definitely been integral with that, because he's recognized that like there's no rules to spirituality, and any rules that you place upon it become a limitation. And like there's no rules to reality itself. Like we have morals that people have built and created, but everything is inherently neutral. There is no objective good and bad. It's all nuance. And so I started to realize through that, that this idea of myself is just a concept, is just an idea. And if I'm resisting things that I want to do and like have fun with my friends, as long as it's not like, you know, harming anyone, like there's nothing wrong with it. And so I've been starting to share more and purposefully share more about that. And it's been funny because it's like the opposite reaction that I was afraid of happening was, of course, like I've had multiple people reach out and be like, dude, it's awesome to be able to see and like resonate with someone. And that's really what I'm trying to do anything, it's just like resonate with people and share my true and authentic self. And that's how you're able to connect with people. Mm. And so through that, there's actually been a lot more people who've been like, dude, I love that I can see you're just like a normal dude who like goes out with his friends, but like you still talk about this stuff and like you have this balance. It's so cool. Like I thought you were like this like monk type person. Like I get that so much. People are like, or they'll talk to someone that I know, and then this person will relay it to me, and they're like, yeah, they were asking like, is he like a monk or something? Like what's he like in person? And so like I want to like fucking destroy that narrative as best as I can. And it's very freeing, because there's a resistance to reality when you're trying to fit into an idea. Mm. Because an idea is always limited. It's always bound. And so as you let go of all of the ideas, you're free. You're free to flow with reality. But as long as you hold on to them, you restrict yourself. And so I was very much restricting myself from the flow of reality when I was caught up in that idea of myself as being like a spiritual person. But as I've let go more and more of that, it's like people are able to resonate on such a deeper level with me, because I'm out there showing that like you can do both, and you don't have to hold on to like these rules about, oh, I can't do this, I shouldn't do this. It's like find your balance. Everyone has their own balance. Like find yours, and there are no rigid structures that you have to follow. And through that, you'll align so much more with that flow of reality.
It's funny because we have learned English and we've learned to communicate with people in person. No one taught us how to communicate with other people online as we truly are. It's not something we were raised with. And in fact, video itself is only where anyone could create a video and upload it to the internet. It's only like 20 years old, if that. And so it raises this point where it's cool to watch people who have created content for a longer period of time progress more into themselves. The example that comes to mind initially for me is Jordan Syatt, where if you look at his videos 10 years ago versus today, he's so much more himself, so much willing to curse, so much more willing to just not care. And I think you only get to that point by communicating in that way for maybe 10 years? I mean, like, when do you feel like you have a grasp of the English language? Maybe like when you're 10, when you're 12, like you could actually start to communicate and you only get better and better as you go on. But we don't know what a content creator for 30 years looks like because it doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a fantastic point. And yeah, I think there's always going to be a life cycle, like with everything. And I think early on, it's like you're learning the ropes when you're, yeah, a content creator. It's a completely new entity, you know, within the last few years. And so early on, it's like you kind of go back and forth with like putting yourself out there. But then, you know, you start having success in certain situations and it's like, oh, I want more of that. But then you cut yourself off from the thing that got you the success, which was just being yourself. And then so it's like the pendulum starts to swing one way where you're like, oh, this does well. I'm going to keep doing this. And then it's like, oh, fuck, I'm feeling trapped now. And it's like, let's let go of that and go over here. And then it's like you're fully just like, don't give a shit about anything and just like posting anything. And then it's like, all right, let's add some more structure with these things that we've learned. And it's always just like going back and forth like that. But you can't figure out all of those things without, while having a fear of like going too far in one end. Like it's always swinging. So you always just like keep moving forward and follow where it's taking you. And so for me, tying it back to, you know, the situation of like people thinking that I don't go out and I'm some sort of fucking monk, like I have to show that and then like be more willing to do that. And then it's like maybe I go too far and I go out like, you know, three nights on a weekend and just feel awful the next week. And it's like, all right, let's swing it back. Let's, you know, find more of a balance. And maybe I can still go out three nights, but like, you know, not drink as much each night. And like you're always kind of finding that balance, but you're not doing it from like, oh, there might be a consequence. Like if I start going down this path, so I don't want to experience that. But it's like, what if experiencing that consequence is going to teach you something that you can take back and then keep moving forward and then have that in your arsenal? But if you're too afraid of experiencing it, which I'm working on literally right now, is like, I can recognize more clearly potential consequences, but I don't actually know if they're there. So I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't go there. And I'm like afraid of like striving towards a certain thing because I see that I'm inherently whole and complete. And it's like, well, if I'm going towards that, then maybe I'm reinforcing lack right now. And it's like, no, just go for that thing. See where it takes you. Take it all the way that you want. Experience some consequences. Learn something. It's almost like, you know, taking one step back to take two steps forward. If you're not willing to go back, you're just like kind of trending on this like very slow and steady line. But then maybe if you're just like flowing with reality is not a straight line. So you take a dip, but then you shoot up because of what you learned in that dip. And so rather than restricting yourself and holding on to these like rigid, you know, labels of what I should be doing, what I think I need to be doing, what other people think I should be doing, just do shit and experience things and go through things. And from that, you'll learn so much more. And then eventually, you know, you put your head down, do that for a while, pick your head back up. It's like you have all of these experiences and they've all informed each other. But if you were so afraid of like going too far, experiencing some consequences, you would never have those things in your arsenal. And you move so much more slowly and you're restricting yourself from being able to embody that true self at the end of the day. Yeah.
I was talking to Sahil Bloom about, you know, he said he's found enough finally. He's found enough because he had a son and this is amazing. I've got it. And I said, so if you found enough, why are you continuing to write? Why are you continuing to do these business ventures? Why are you continuing to write a book? All these things. It's like, well, what am I going to do? You know, like I still have to do something. I still have to exist in this world. So I think it's really important to recognize that even though you are whole and complete in this moment as you truly are, it doesn't mean you're just going to sit in a room. You can if you'd like, but you could also experience reality expressing itself as many times as you'd like and go on different missions and side quests and all these things. And that's beneficial as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the shift in mentality of recognizing that you don't have to do it, but you can.
Yeah.
Do the thing not because you have to, not because you have this need to build up this idea of yourself and become more, become something for the world. It's like you're already that. So do shit because you can, but not because you have to in order to feel more complete. Recognize the wholeness and completeness that you always are, and then do shit because you have the opportunity to do so, but not because you have to. And so much of our society and so much of, you know, especially like a capitalistic society is reinforced that, and I'm not like coming on here saying like capitalism is all bad. There's definitely aspects of it that are great and beneficial and all of those things, but there is an inherent aspect of it that reinforces a state of lack. And as people don't necessarily feel whole in themselves, they feel like they need all these external things, they're going to keep striving for all those things. That's why, you know, advertisements run rampant all over the place. And because they're telling you, you need this in order to be complete, but that isn't true, but they're trying to fit this narrative. And because we all have these ideas of ourselves that can fluctuate, that can be built up and torn down based on the external, and don't recognize the truth of what we are as reality with no idea of ourselves, that idea of ourselves is constantly fluctuating, changing, exists differently inside of everyone's mind. So it could never be the truth of what you are. As we recognize that more clearly, we see that we are just reality, just that flow, not cut off from anything. And then we just keep doing shit because we can, because we're able to, because we're here. And it's dope. And reality is fucking sick. But not because you have to in order to become more than what you are, because it's impossible.
So beautifully put, my man.
Thanks, man.
What happens after we die?
Oh, man, that is a loaded one. I think there's a lot of conversations that have to be had before we talk about after death. And I think a lot of it comes back to that idea of ourselves. Like, what really is dying if not the idea, the concept, the idea of ourself as something separate from reality? So this can help with people's fear of death, is recognizing that the only thing ever dying is the idea, the concept of yourself. And so as you are able to see more clearly that you're not that, that you're just awareness, you're just reality, you're everything and everyone that's ever been and ever will be and ever is here now.
All at once?
Everything, everywhere, all at once? Yeah, I still need to see that movie. Fuck, I've gotten recommended it like 100,000 times probably. But so in recognizing that, you see that you're not something that can die. Mm-hmm. The truth of what you are is the eternal awareness of reality. Experiencing this illusion of duality, this illusion of self, this illusion of division here and now, which is awesome that we have this experience, because without, you know, the idea of a self or the ego, there wouldn't be experience to be had. So it's, people get caught up in thinking like the ego is a bad thing. Oh, I got to kill my ego, ego death, all this stuff. It's like the ego is not a bad thing. The ego is just your ability to identify, your ability to, for someone to say, hey, Andrew, and for me to respond and look at them and recognize it. But it isn't the truth of what we are. It's just a concept, a tool that allows for us to more easily communicate. Like if you had a group of people and everyone went by you and we didn't have names and you're like, hey, you, everyone turns around. It's like, that's not super helpful. But with directions too, and as because we have names, we can say, hey, Danny, and then you turn around and then we can more easily communicate. So it's a tool that can be utilized, but people get so caught up in seeing that and thinking like, oh, I am Andrew, I am Danny. And it's like, no, that's just what your parents called you, but mm-hmm. it's not the truth of what you are. And as you let go more and more of those ideas of what you think you are, you can more clearly see that you just are what is here and now. And as that eternal awareness of reality in the moment, you can recognize that you're not something that could ever die. So after death is just like, what's going to happen to me after I die? I'm going to continue on as everyone and everything, no differently than I am right now.
What do you say to somebody who understands that theoretically and can get behind that but hasn't experienced that?
Keep questioning. I think a lot of people, pretty much everyone, like even like some of the big self-help gurus out there, I won't name any names, but like they get caught up on a level. They're like, I'm willing to let go of a lot of things, but the idea of me as a teacher, as a guru, they're not willing to let go of. And so they talk about, you know, maybe they talk about letting go of identity, but I think it's pretty rare actually that people go as far as to recognize that you're not what you think you are. Like, you're not this idea. Our entire society is built on the belief that we are these ideas, that we are these concepts, that we are this thing that is separate from everything. And so that's why I avoid the words teacher or guru or anything like the plague, because that is an identity. It's another thing that separates me from everything. Like, I'm not a guru, I'm not a teacher, I'm you. I'm you. So people, though, will get comfortable with that identity. And a lot of people will let go of a lot, but then they're not willing to let go of that. And that will cut them off, and they'll get caught up in, like, you know, experiencing some pleasures and some comfort because they're seen in a certain way. But as they do that, they're just reinforcing the illusion of division. They're just reinforcing to all the people who are following them that they need them. They're reinforcing that they are something separate from them that they need. So it's letting go of all of the concepts, and you can see that, you know, you're just what's left. And I don't remember what the question was again. I just keep going on these tangents and but is that what you initially asked?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you referred to yourself as not a guru, not a teacher, but you do one-on-one calls, helping people understand some of this stuff. What have been some of the most impactful moments for you as the person on the other side explaining your experience to seeing somebody change their perspective or change their life because of some of these ideas that you've realized or learned about?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, honestly. I really enjoy the one-on-one stuff. And it's funny how many things we go through and we're, like, kind of worried about doing it, afraid of doing it, whatever. Like, for me, it was content for so long. Then it was, like, months of one-on-ones. Like, I was like, who the fuck am I to talk to someone about their life? Or is anyone going to want to talk to me? Is anyone going to be willing to? Am I going to do a good job? And, like, again, all of these limiting beliefs. And here I am after having, like, I don't know, probably at least 100 one-on-one calls now. Like, I really enjoy it. Like, I love doing it. And it's cool because, like, for the most part, I feel pretty good about my life. Like, I don't suffer nearly as much as I used to. And we can kind of, I think you can get to a point, not saying that I have, but you don't almost even remember what it's like to suffer as much as you used to. And so I think mixing in one-on-ones, the main reason I wanted to start doing them was to see other people's perspectives on things and see different situations that I've maybe never experienced but can resonate with on some level because I've experienced maybe something similar or a similar type of feeling. And so oftentimes it's just my perspective on it. Like, I put myself in their shoes and help explain how I would maybe do it, not exactly how I would do it, but, like, things I would think about in the situation. And so it's very much, I know, as we've talked about with podcasting and everything, sort of being that mirror and that ability for someone to see themselves in you, but then also, like, express themselves fully, and then you, like, sort of radiate it back in whatever way. So it's very much like letting go of my idea of myself and just being a sounding board for them and offering potential options for them that maybe they didn't see. And it's funny because oftentimes when someone will start out a call, like the first time I ever talk to them, they're like going through everything. They're like, oh, I'm this type of person. I'm this person. I did this because I'm this. I did this because I'm this. And so right there, it's like 10 things they just said that they're like, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. And it's like for what I push that's different than therapy is recognizing that none of those are true. Like, let's work on why you think those are true and recognize that they're not, and just understand fundamentally that those ideas that you have of yourself, that you're a worrier, an overthinker, an angry person, are never the truth of what you are. You have the capacity to experience anger. You have the capacity to think about something for an extended period of time. But as you hold on to the belief that you are that, it cuts you off because then it's reinforced in every moment. It's like you start feeling a little bit angry, something that you could have let go of. You've reinforced so many times that you're an angry person. It just keeps going and goes. And that was something that I dealt with for a while. You know, that recorded call that I had at work was like, I had all of these ideas of myself and I didn't realize that, you know, that idea is never the truth. So that's what I sort of help people let go of. And among, you know, we talk about all different sorts of stuff, but it's been fun to experience it and see people's perspectives shift. And, you know, I can't take any credit for any of it. I'm just there as a sounding board. Like, they're the ones doing the work, and really the work does happen in their life. It's like the actions that they take despite, you know, all the feelings that they've had, the ideas that they have about themselves, as they do more and more things despite how they feel, things start to shift. And so, like, they're doing all the work, so I can't, you know, take credit for anything. It's just I'm just there as a mirror for them.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And I think really helpful language for me personally has been the story that I'm telling myself about this situation, this scenario, this character trait of myself. That's all it is. Like the story you're telling yourself. And I'm curious about like specific examples. Do you have a story or an example from somebody you've worked with that has changed the way they feel, and without using any names, obviously, but is there anything that comes to mind about something particularly impactful about working with someone, or maybe it's even a person or a friend in your own life who mm-hmm. you've said something to and it's changed a small thing or a big thing that's had a huge impact?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a number of things come to mind. I have one of my best friends has historically like gotten frustrated about things, like really got caught up in judging individual situations a lot. And so we've had some deeper talks about, he's told me multiple times that me sharing and talking about how nothing's ever inherently good or bad, like you don't know what a situation's going to lead to, no matter how shitty it feels in the moment, like you don't know where it's going to lead to tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next day. And he said it's completely shifted like how he thinks about things. And we've had so many talks, like, because we talk here and there, and you know, he's one of my best friends, about like things he's gone through where in the past he would have looked at something and been like, oh wow, like that is an awful thing, like I beat himself up, like is it my fault, like what's wrong with me, to I don't know what this is going to lead to. I don't know what this is. It doesn't feel great right now, but that's just a feeling. I'm uncomfortable right now, but it's not inherently a bad thing. And he said, like, as he's been able to let go of that, it's been like in relationships and work and all of that, it's like completely been able to shift how he perceives his life. So it's really cool to be able to talk to people, because I fucking love talking about this stuff. Obviously, I've been talking a lot today about all of it. But yeah, it's my favorite thing to do, is talk about this type of stuff. So being able to do it and like get paid to do it with one-on-ones and like just talk with friends about it, like I'm always willing to talk about these types of things, whether I'm on camera or not. So it's cool that like, oh, it's like this is just any other situation, I'm just talking to you and we just happen to have a microphone and a camera on us. Like that's the only shift.
Yeah. And well, I can attest that's true. So we ended our previous podcast talking about some quotes, which episode 225, if you haven't checked it out, if you got to this point in the episode, you should go check out my first one with Andrew. It was great. Let's also do some quotes here about from you and some tweets as well. Those who end up doing what they want to do in life rarely ever knew what they wanted to do in life. So do it today and take some time to look around and smell the roses while you're at it. Tomorrow isn't promised for anyone. What comes to mind when you hear that?
Yeah, I think it's funny because whenever I'm talking about something, make a video, make a tweet, it's like literally things I'm going through in my life. And so that one, I remember it was like getting hung up on trying to think about where all this is going to lead. And like, where my podcast was going to go, like, how quickly is it going to blow up? Like, is it going to blow up? Like, where am I going to be, you know, travel wise in a couple months? And it's like, I don't know any of that stuff. I don't know. And that's okay. And so it's like, it was a reminder for myself to recognize, like, I have no idea where any of this stuff is going to lead in, like, what I'm going to be, what type of situations I'm going to be in next year. Like, I have absolutely no idea. And that's awesome. And so recognizing that, you know, historically most people didn't have this like idea that, oh, I'm going to be this and do this and do this and do this. And if they did, it usually ends up being something completely different. But those who really changed the world, like oftentimes never really knew what they wanted to be when they grew up. And I've just heard so many stories about that. It's not like necessarily specific people come to mind, but it's basically like almost anyone for the most part. So yeah, it helped me just in that moment remember that I don't know, and that's okay. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because I love doing it. And naturally things are going to shift, opportunities are going to come up, and I don't know what it's going to be. And that's awesome, yeah. Quite frankly.
I think that what's so cool about that is a reminder to self. And I think people often get confused when they see content creators. I think it was Mark Manson who said, the reason why I write self-help type content is because I'm the one who actually needs it the most. And people think he's the one with all the answers, but he's just reminding himself by writing. And it sounds pretty similar when you're talking about that story. Just that tweet is a reminder to yourself of, this is what I'm doing, this is where I want to go, and I don't have all the answers. And I think that's a common misconception people have.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been trying to tell people, like responding to comments when people are like, hey, like this hit me at the exact right time, like thank you so much. And I'll respond like, cool, I'm just out here talking to myself because I'm going through the same shit, but like glad it resonated for you too. And it really is. It's like when I look at all my videos, it's just things. It's not necessarily every video. Like a lot of times it'll be something I think of that is separate from like what I'm going through, but oftentimes it's literally what I'm going through. And every time it's been something that's helped me with something. So it's always like being filtered through my experience, through my own life. And so I think that's why it comes out seeming authentic, because it literally is just all things that have helped me. It's not like I never struggled with anything and just like read some books and now I'm like posting about it. It's literally like I'm went through some stuff, was experiencing some things, figured out some ways to deal with it, help myself overcome it, whatever it may be. And then now I have opportunities to share it. And so I can create a video out of it and then share it.
Yeah. It's beautiful. So, next quote here or tweet. If you're really worried about judgment or what other people might be thinking of you and how you're living your life right now, just remember that there's literally an infinite amount of things they could be thinking about. Odds are it isn't you.
Yeah, that was one of the first sort of recognitions I had back, I don't know, five years ago. Was like, I was always so hung up on what everyone was thinking about me. And it's funny how often so many people are so concerned with what everyone's thinking about them, and they fail to realize that they're probably not at the end of the day. Like there's so many things they could be thinking about, so many people they could be thinking about. They have their own entire human experience that they're experiencing with family, friends, jobs, things they worry about, fear of other people's judgments. And you think like they're all thinking about you. And it's almost like such a egotistical sort of thing. People hate hearing that because it's like, oh, you're victim shaming or whatever. But it's like, it's true. You're so hung up on your idea of yourself. Like, stop fucking thinking about yourself so much. And sometimes that's, you know, the way people need to hear it. But everyone's so caught up in their idea of themselves and the idea that everyone's thinking about it as much as they are. And no one is, because everyone's thinking about their own idea of themselves more than anyone else. So it's like people don't even have that much time to spend very much time judging other people because they're so hung up on their idea of themselves. And it's like those who are suffering the most just need an outlet to judge other people, to, you know, post that, you know, reflection of themselves. And that's where that judgment comes from for the most part. But yeah, everyone's thinking about themselves and their own shit. Like they don't really have that much time to think about you. And so that was the initial one of the initial recognitions that I had that freed me from such a strong fear of judgment.
Such an important realization. I love to end these episodes with a challenge for people listening, because I find that a challenge is often the best way to find out what you really value, and also a great way for people to do something practical in their own life to help them get to a better place. What challenge do you have for people listening?
Ooh, question everything. Everything that comes up about what you think you are, what you think reality is, just question it endlessly, ceaselessly, with no avail whatsoever, because it's the settling on the answers that creates the friction from between ourselves and reality, because reality is always uncertain. Reality is always flowing, always changing. It's like, you know, a river, and to settle on something is like latching onto the side of the river. And so as you latch on to ideas, things that seem to make you comfortable in the moment, inevitably, you know, that river's gonna take you away with it. And so it's through the questioning that you'll be allowed to continue to flow with that river. So question everything, literally everything about your idea of yourself, the way you think reality is, the way you think you are, the way you think other people are, because your ideas about them are never the truth of what they are. Your ideas about yourself are never the truth of what they are. Your ideas of reality is never the truth of what it is, because reality can't be said. You can't say what reality is, because reality isn't words. And that's an Alan Watts quote. I'm not going to take credit for that. But yeah, question everything.
Andrew Murnane, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm so grateful for you being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. Really appreciate it. Had a fucking awesome time chatting with you today.
Hell yeah. Awesome.
Fuck yeah. Let's go.
Dude, give me a hug, bro.
Yeah. That was fun, dude.
Good stuff.